I grew up in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah. Where were you born?
I was born in Massachusetts. We moved to Tuscaloosa in 1965. My dad was the rabbi at Hillel in Tuscaloosa, and he taught at the university. So I moved down there in the fifth grade in 65. And then I stayed, graduated from high school, and then I went to college there.
You went to Tuscaloosa High School?
Tuscaloosa High School. Okay. Eastwood Junior High, Tuscaloosa High School.
Okay.
University of Alabama. And then I worked for a year for the university writing news stories and then got a master's degree. All the while was working with my longtime partner, Tony Ruffino. And then when I was finishing my master's, he invited me to come to Birmingham and work with him full time.
Now, when you're a student, or prior to being a student, did you have a pretty great interest in music before you enrolled at Alabama?
Yeah, I always enjoyed listening to music.
So what kind of
I mean, going backwards, just to give you a perspective, Tuscaloosa really had a very healthy music scene from local and regional bands. And the YMCA downtown on Friday nights had dances every Friday night. And there were a handful of bands, the Rivets, the Gents, and the Misfits were three of the bigger bands that played. Chuck Lavelle, who plays keyboards now for the Rolling Stones and played with the Allman Brothers, was in the Misfits.
What kind of bands are these?
They were just
rock.
Yeah, they were just, you know, pop bands.
Sure.
In the mid-60s, they played R&B and pop music. So when you were in junior high or high school on a Friday night, you wanted to go someplace. You went downtown to the Y, which is just off of Greensboro Avenue, and the bands would play. And then on University Boulevard, up towards Druid City Hospital, was the Fort Brandon Armory. And the Fort Brandon Armory used to have concerts. Little Anthony played there, and two of the earlier incarnations of the Allman Brothers band played there. The Allman Joys and the Hourglass, which were bands that Greg and Dwayne were in prior to them starting the Allman Brothers band. And then I'm sure there were more places that, you know, if you talk to some of the old guys that are 5 years older than me, can tell you about what was going on musically and Tuscaloosa back in those days. But we always had the opportunity to come see dance bands.
Yeah.
And then in 1969, Jimi Hendrix came to Tuscaloosa. At the Memorial Coliseum.
Okay. And you were how old? 15, 16?
Yeah, I was in high school.
And were you a fan?
Yeah.
So that was a big deal
for
you.
Oh, it was a big deal for everybody that went there. Actually, one of my partners now, Michael Trucks, cold called Tony Ruffino, who at the time lived in New York and was Michael and my longtime partner until he passed away a couple of years ago, just cold called him and said, Tony, Michael Trucks, and the other student was Doug Casmus, who was from Montgomery and now is a manager and a publisher in Nashville, and cold called Tony and said, hey, we've got this big Coliseum on campus. We see you're promoting a lot of concerts with Jimi Hendrix. You should bring them down to Tuscaloosa. You'll make money. And it was very serendipitous because Tony had a friend that he had known since he was a teenager that lived in Leeds, Alabama. So it wasn't like Tuscaloosa, Alabama was completely off of his chart, because his friend Petey lived in Leeds. So he said, all right. And he flew down, co-promoted the show with the students. The show did well. He went back to Birmingham, flew back to New York. They called him the next week and said, we see you're doing a lot of dates with Grand Funk Railroad. You should bring them here. They'll do well. I said, okay. Brought Grand Funk Railroad. Went back. Called back another week. Said, Three Dog Night, you're doing a lot of dates with. Come bring them to Tuscaloosa. They'll do well. And that just continued from 69 until 77 when the BJCC opened.
And that completely changed things for Memorial.
That was a major...
Was it a death knell?
Well, we went from doing 20 shows in a year to probably 4 shows a year because the Civic Center was new. Mm-hmm. And you wanted to play, A, the bigger city, and you wanted to play the newer place. And the Coleman Coliseum was an athletic facility. So it became harder and harder to get in there. And then it was just much more convenient to play Birmingham.
When Jimi Hendrix came, you were in high school, and you were right. A fan, and you were a fan of music. Were there other acts other than him? Was he the first big act at Coleman Coliseum that you can remember? Okay, so when you got to college,
right?
How did you get involved with UPC? When did you do it? Was your freshman year?
Yeah, my freshman year. I just was walking through the Ferguson Center and landed up on the third floor, and there was a suite of offices, and there were people in there, and there were some signs about signing up to put up posters for an Emerson, Lake and Palmer concert and for a Todd Rundgren concert. And so I signed up and put up posters and worked as a stagehand for Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and then worked as a stagehand for Liza Minnelli, which was the homecoming concert in 1973.
Oh, wow.
And I just worked my way in. And by the time I was a junior and I was a senior, I just worked my way up in the organization.
To what?
I was the president of the program council for 2 years.
So talk about acts that you saw other than Liza Minnelli and the ones you mentioned. I mean, who all did you see, like, during your time at UA, before you became president? Who were some, just drop some names, some of the acts that you saw, or all, if you can remember.
Well, virtually every act except the Beatles played Tuscaloosa. We were the only 15,000-seat venue between Atlanta and New Orleans or Memphis going down into Florida. So every act played there. I mean, Led Zeppelin played there, The Who played there, The Band played there, The Eagles played there, Elvis Presley played there 3 times, Elton John played there 3 times, Yes played there, Joni Mitchell played there, The Doobie Brothers, Skynyrd, Linda Ronstadt. I mean, all of the bands of that era played there. Jethro Tull, Kansas, Charlie Daniels Band.
Neil Young.
Neil Young played there. That's right. And when Neil Young played the Tuscaloosa Amphitheater last fall, I was talking to his manager, and I said, "Do you remember the last time you were here?" And I said, "February 5th, 1973. He says, "I was here." Bob Dylan played the Coliseum, and Dylan's manager was here in July, and he and I have known each other for 35 years. And I said, "Jeff, do you remember the last time you were here?" And he says, "As a matter of fact, I did. We played around Halloween at the Coliseum for your homecoming." And I said, "You play thousands, and how do you remember?" He says, "I remember because I don't have a computer. I have to write things down, and so I remember." But every act played there. Joe Cocker played there, The Grateful Dead, Eric Clapton. I mean, you know, none of the Beatles played. You know, obviously there may have been a handful of others, but by and large, all of the touring acts that were out playing played down there.
So was it your responsibility as president of UPC, and what your jobs were prior to that, was it your responsibility to book these bands?
Well, the way the program council was laid out then, there were 5 or 6 divisions. There was an entertainment division, there was a recreation division, there was a cultural division, there was a marketing division, and there was a chair for each of those divisions. And then the chair and their committees would be responsible for providing. There was a movie at the Ferguson Center, there was a movie theater. I mean, we showed 200 movies a year. You know, who the person that was the chair of the film committee, along with his committee, booked movies down in the Ferguson Center, and the cultural chair and his group booked the Bolshoi Ballet and the operas and Van Cliburn and other types of symphonies and cultural events. And then the entertainment chair booked the music along with his committee. And, you know, no different than it is today, you're really a function of what's around. And in addition to promoting concerts in the Memorial Coliseum, now the Coleman Coliseum, Earth, Wind & Fire played there. We promoted a lot of shows in Foster Auditorium. Jackson Browne played in Foster. Mountain played in Foster. Bonnie Raitt played in Foster. Morgan Auditorium, a lot of shows played there. Frank Zappa played there. Billy Joel played there. Joe Bryath played there. Randy Newman played there.
Buckingham Nicks
played there. The Ferguson Center, where the movie theater is. Phoebe Snow played there. I mean, we were all over the place, just who was around, what was an available facility that was open, and let's roll with it.
And so you also used the Bama Theater, too, you mentioned Lily Tomlin.
Yeah, and then we did some stuff downtown at the Bama Theater also. Yeah, Lily Tomlin played down there, two shows. Ry Cooter played two shows.
Yeah. So when you were a student, and you know, you had mentioned that you were stagehand at some of the shows, when you were more embedded with UPC and you had an official position there, were you still working with the artists at the shows? What were some of your active roles as the shows were actually happening? Did you have any interaction with those artists as they played?
Well, I mean, even now, our relationship with the artist is, well, it depends, mm-hmm. right? I mean, as a student years and years and years ago, I didn't have a relationship with any artists. Mm-hmm. Being in business for 35 years now and promoting acts 10, 20, 30 times over the last 35 years, you learn faces, you learn names, you see somebody. Some acts you're more friendly with than others, and they know who you are, you know who they are, but predominantly, our relationships are with their agents and with their managers and with their accountants mm-hmm. and with their touring staff, their tour manager, their production managers.
Any of those shows stick out to you while you were there as particularly memorable for you personally?
Yeah, the Hendrix, the Stones and Stevie Wonder, Zeppelin.
Just because you were a big fan?
Well, just because they were playing on our campus and our facility, and it was a great show. They were great bands. The Band was one of the best shows that ever played down there. Elton John and Kiki Dee played on a Saturday night after Alabama won an afternoon football game like 77-0. And I think it was in 76. And it was completely sold out, 15,000 plus people. And it was, like I said, it was Saturday night. It was after a ball game. And, I mean, he absolutely tore the roof off. Elvis Presley was unbelievable. You know, and then the smaller shows. Phoebe Snow was great. I mean, the Police played upstairs at the Ferguson Center in the ballroom. Zappa was great. Back in those days, after the concert, there would be an after party at somebody's house. And a lot of times, the acts would show up and just hang.
Do you know any, like, specifically that you can recall?
Zappa.
Just at somebody's house in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, somebody from the UPC.
Oh, man.
You know, would host a, say, everybody come on over to so-and-so's house. And, you know, after the show, everybody go over there and just hang out.
And some of the bars, too, I've heard. Like, some go hang out at, like, Chucker or someplace.
Oh,
like
yeah, well, the Chucker was a great place.
Right. It's amazing to hear that, you know, living there now and having lived there my entire life, and I can count on a pretty short list a lot of the acts that have played in my lifetime at Tuscaloosa, a very short list at Memorial Coliseum. I mean, you talk about the homecoming shows you had mentioned, Bob Dylan and Widespread Panic and Queen Latifah and other acts who had played when I was younger, and now it's utilized minimally. So, in terms of, like, obviously BJCC, like you said, played the largest role in reducing the number of acts that came through Tuscaloosa. But Tuscaloosa remained a college town.
Right.
And has remained a college town over the years. So you would think there would be that appeal in terms of why acts like that that have appeal to college students would come to Tuscaloosa. But they didn't.
Well, the process is, who's the promoter that has the money that's going to put up the money to risk to promote a concert? Mm-hmm. Because as the promoter, you guarantee everybody. You guarantee the act, the building, the police, the ushers, the doorman, the ticket takers. you pay the insurance, first aid, you pay every bill there is, and then if there's more money left from ticket sales after you've paid everybody, you make. If there's not, you lose. Mm-hmm. So it becomes a function of who's the bank, who's stepping and saying, I'll take that risk. You know, after 77, the dynamics changed in Tuscaloosa, where the guarantees for X went sky high. When Jimi Hendrix got paid $15,000 or so in 69, I mean, now a big act, you can pay $500,000. The financial paradigm is very different now than it was. But what's brought Tuscaloosa back is the Tuscaloosa Amphitheater.
Sure.
Because now there's a venue and there's a business model that works where you can promote 15 or 18 or 20 or 22 shows a year. You know, the city has come up with a programming model where they want to try to promote concerts that appeal to all different types of demographics. Whether you like country music or contemporary Christian music or alternative music or pop music or R&B music. And so, you know, during the course of a season, we're looking to promote 3 R&B shows, 3 country shows, 3 pop shows, a couple rock shows, 3 student alternative type of shows. And together you've got a season, you know, which is what we're in the process now of having for our 3rd season down there.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like students would factor in more than it sounds like they do. Because, I mean, the bulk of the shows that are booked are during the summertime, right?
No, actually, this year, very few in the summer.
There are a lot in the fall.
Right. And there were a handful in the spring.
Right.
And again, that was just a function in 2013. That's when the bands were around. Mm-hmm. We could do them when they're available, right? If they're in Oregon, we can't do them the next day.
Right.
You know, if they're in Europe, you can't do them the next week. If they're off the road recording, you can't do them. You know, and an artist that tours goes from one city to 400 miles to 400 miles to 300 miles to 400 miles to 400 miles and puts a little puzzle together and makes their way around the country. And it's just totally a function of when they're available. By the end of this year, we're going to end up with a lot of shows in October in Tuscaloosa. It just worked out when that was when the bands were available. We said, can we get September? Can we not get July? Well, we're not around then. You want this date or do you not want to make an offer? We're not around in those other time frames. So we're really at the mercy of the act's touring schedule and when they can get to Tuscaloosa.
And you'd prefer fall, right? Students are in town or
spring?
Well,
it depends. I mean, not all shows appeal to just students. You know, there's some shows that don't really appeal to students at all.
Sure.
So, you know, in a perfect world, we'd like to spread it out where, you know, you're doing a few in April and May and June and July and August, September and October. But again, we're at the mercy of who's available when. And also, what shows make sense where we think that we can do them and make money or break even.
Yeah, and you were fortunate too, that, you know, a band like Widespread Panic is available in the fall,
right
when the students are there.
Right.
It's perfect for that demographic.
Correct.
So back in the 70s, late 60s and 70s, when you're booking bands, you don't have to necessarily discriminate as much, right? Because...
What do you mean discriminate?
You don't have to be as picky in terms of, like, what bands you pick. I mean, like you said, it all depends on when they're available, and that's when you can bring them and book them now. But back then, you just book. Was it a situation where there were more bands were more available more often, and you had the luxury of booking them in booking more shows per year? See, now you can't book as many shows in Tuscaloosa.
Well, from Coliseum to the Tuscaloosa Amphitheater, we're doing more shows now than we did at the Memorial Coliseum in the course of a physical year. I mean, we do 7, 8, 9, 10 shows at the most. The rest of them would be in smaller venues. I mean, we're going to do 16, 17, 18 shows in Tuscaloosa this year. We did 23 last year and 19 the first year. I mean, that's a lot of shows for a city that has 100,000 people living there.
Was there anything that did extremely well back in the 70s as opposed to what does extremely well now. It seems like country is huge wherever it is, but it has been very successful at the amphitheater. You're bringing more popular acts like Rascal Flatts is probably going to do extremely well this year, and Luke Bryan and Miranda Lambert did extremely well. Is that a cue to say, okay, well, maybe we should do more country shows per year? Is that the same thing back in those days? I mean, did you have to sort of look at those statistics and what did well, or did you just book who was available and just bring them?
Well, no. We do a lot of research.
Sure.
We do a lot of research before we make an offer for an act. Years ago, the research was a little different than it is now, but what artists are doing in other parts of the country, how many records they're selling, what kind of radio airplay they're getting. Again, it's not just throwing something up against the wall. You can make or lose. Those aren't good enough odds. We've always passed on more shows than we promoted because there were always more shows that didn't make sense than do make sense. I mean, this year in Tuscaloosa, if we end up doing 18 shows, we probably passed on 30 shows that just didn't make sense. We would have lost a lot. And it was outside of what the mayor and us agreed that we wanted to do. And we said, why would we lose that kind of money to do the show? It doesn't hold any value to what the goal is of the Tuscaloosa Amphitheater.
Have any, in recent memory at the amphitheater specifically, have any made complete sense on paper that haven't panned out in the way that you would hope?
A couple.
Which ones specifically?
I'd rather not mention specific names. Uh-huh. All I can tell you is that, yeah, unfortunately, in the concert business, you can't bat 1,000.
Right.
You're not always going to be right. But every year, we have a successful year. And, you know, that's just the reality of the concert business, whether you're promoting at Madison Square Garden or you're promoting in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Not every show does what your research shows it's going to do.
Well, and you said that you're booking more shows now in Tuscaloosa than you were able to back in the 70s when you were involved as a college student. What does it mean to you personally, someone who did work back then and was involved in all of those concerts and bringing names like that to your hometown? What does it mean to you now to see that sort of come full circle with the amphitheater? You're able to bring a show like Bob Dylan, Wilco, and My Morning Jacket, or other major shows like Neil Young, who have played Tuscaloosa again.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you personally to see that happening in Tuscaloosa again?
Well, it makes me feel very proud to be part of a team that's involved in the project. I mean, there are a lot of people that work very hard to make the Tuscaloosa Amphitheater successful. A lot of people in Tuscaloosa, I mean, led by the mayor, and a lot of people in our office. I mean, it's by no means a one-person show. I mean, it's a team of players that work hard to come up with acts. And plus, we've got a lot of competition with the Oak Mountain Amphitheater here in Birmingham, 60 miles away with 2,000 more seats. So, you know, we don't get everything that we want down there, but we believe at the end of each fiscal year we're going to end up with what makes sense and make everybody as happy as we can make them, where our sponsors and box seat people continue to support us and the community continues to support us by buying tickets to the shows.
The community seems extremely pleased with the amphitheater so far. In the 3 years now that it's existed there, are you pleased with the performance of the amphitheater?
Oh, absolutely. To whatever degree anyone would want to judge the success of the amphitheater, all I would say, it's not by happenstance. It wasn't just let's build it and see what happens. We had a very, very, very detailed plan on what we wanted to do. From the very beginning, before a shovel was put into the dirt and they had their groundbreaking, we spent a long time figuring out what we wanted to build, what size we wanted to build, what did we want to be, what kind of shows did we want to do. And from the very beginning, this is a very carefully thought out plan. And a lot of people working real hard, Wendy and her team at the amphitheater, you know, doing a great, it's the prettiest amphitheater in America. There's not a prettier place out there that I know of. And it's spick and span clean. I mean, they keep it in top shape. The amphitheater staff is conscious of how important our patrons are. You know, we're very conscious of how important the artists are and the experiences and the amenities that we've invested in our sponsors and our box seat people and our premium seats people, and you know, really tried to think through our little engine that could, what do we need to be so we can be successful and make this thing work. And it's not a mistake. I mean, it's a lot of people in a lot of areas all pushing when they need to push and pulling when they need to pull. And we all share the same goal. And, you know, for somebody that grew up in Tuscaloosa, it's just a thrill to be a part of something with a lot of other great folks that have been able to make this happen.
Are you an Alabama fan?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, so
sure.
What it reminds me of is, you know, my parents, one was born in 55, one born in 54, they were in college during the Bryant era.
Right.
They grew up with it.
Sure.
They were used to that kind of success with the football team. And now, you know, after that sort of lull in the history of Alabama football where they weren't winning as much, and now you have the Saban era where it's back again. They're used to it, and they're unfazed by it. But people my age can't believe it, right? Because, I mean, we grew up in the era of, like, you know, Franchione and DuBose.
Everybody Shula. Else.
Exactly.
Right.
And so we weren't used to this kind of winning. This is kind of similar to me, where they grew up on campus of Alabama, and all these apps were coming to Memorial Coliseum and Morgan and the Bama. Everybody came.
Right.
And that wasn't the case for me. Like I said, homecoming concert was the concert, and that was like pretty much the only one with the
right.
handful of shows, maybe at the Bama and other places.
Right.
With the amphitheater, everything has changed.
Right.
And now, like I said, in my city, one of my favorite bands, Wilco, and one of my favorite artists, Bob Dylan, they played the same show.
Right.
Down the street from my house.
Right.
And these other bands are coming this fall and have played in the past couple of years, and it's amazing to me.
It's exciting.
It's extremely exciting.
Oh, yeah.
For a music fan and for somebody who lives in Tuscaloosa.
Sure.
Who's not used to it. And I just think it's interesting that the amphitheater exists now, and you sort of have these bookending eras now with the amphitheater and Memorial when it was thriving. To have grown up in that middle era when it was rare to see
right.
a big act in town. It was always a special occasion. For now, for there to be some sort of consistency, that is extremely exciting.
Well, you know, one of the common threads between what happened in the 60s and the 70s and what's happening now in Tuscaloosa with the amphitheater is you have to be needed. You have to be needed. You have to have a place that's needed. And in the late 60s and in the 70s, you had the Memorial Coliseum, which could seat up to 15,000 people. There was no big building in Birmingham. Boutwell Auditorium was it, 5,500 seats. So there was no big building close to Birmingham. Memorial Coliseum was 15,000 capacity. It was needed. Bands were driving through 59 or 20, coming or going north, south, east, or west, and there was somebody willing to make the offer, put up the money, and the shows worked. Today's the same thing. We've got a great 72 to 7,700 capacity, depending on the configuration, where we're needed. There's a need for a facility that the Lumineers want to play, or widespread playing a couple of nights in Birmingham and then wanting to come back 6 months later and play something else, or Brad Paisley playing Birmingham on one run and then a year later wanting to play somewhere else. Or Luke Bryan, not quite sure if he's big enough to play a bigger building, so let's play an underplay at the Tuscaloosa Amphitheater and sell that baby out. Or John Mayer, just coming off of 2 years of being off the road, not being able to sing, and wanting to be in an environment where it's going to be a slam dunk. The show sold out in a day. It sold out in a day the first time when it was canceled. It sold out again. The Tuscaloosa Amphitheater is a facility that's needed, where there are plenty of acts that want to play there. And that's what is happening now, and that's what was happening back in the late 60s and the 70s.
So to focus on Memorial and Coleman now, it didn't go anywhere. It was already there, and neither did BJCC. BJCC is still there, and it still books acts with frequency. Why did the Tuscaloosa Amphitheater change things? If Coleman was there, And in comes BJCC to take all these acts away from it and cause these acts to bypass Tuscaloosa.
Right.
If it stays there, then they build the amphitheater. Why does that change things? And why are acts coming to Tuscaloosa now, even though Birmingham has plenty of venues for
them? Well, you ask a very good question. And the answer to that is, in the mid-80s, promoters realized that the margins that they could make on concerts was limited. You had box office, you had the ticket sales. Meanwhile, the building was making parking, popcorn, beer, soda, sponsors, suites. And so promoters slowly started building their own buildings. That's what Tony and I did with the Oak Mountain Amphitheater. We built it and opened it in 1986, I think, because we needed more revenues. We couldn't sustain paying the acts what they wanted at the BJCC and only have the receipts from the box office to pay all of the bills. So as other promoters across the country were building their amphitheaters, Tony and I built an amphitheater here in Birmingham. And then what happened was the touring paradigm changed. Now you have a bunch of promoters all over the country that have their own outdoor places, and it became the place to play. And particularly for classic rock acts, it gave them a second life where they were able to go and people were able to see their favorite artists outdoors, have fun, remember when they were kids or young people, and have a great experience. And the outdoor buildings that were run by promoters that now had all of this ancillary revenue were now in a position where they could do more concerts because they had more than just the ticket sales. It's the same thing with the Tuscaloosa Amphitheater. The Tuscaloosa Amphitheater has sponsorship revenue, box seat revenue, soda, beer, popcorn, plus ticket sales to offset all of the operating costs of paying the act, the police, the stagehands, the advertising, and all the other associated bills. And because the city has all of those revenues, they believe that the risk-reward ratio on the shows that we propose to them makes sense. And they say, all right, do it. Or we'll say, let's not do that when the risk is too great.
Thank you for doing this.
Oh, you're welcome.